Hey, it's Herbert, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch. Oh, it's comedy in your ears, which we all love.
You're listening to the About Last Night podcast with my boy, Adam Ray.
You miss Costco, but Costco's open. You can go to Costco.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying I miss it. Like, I haven't been in a couple weeks. So I just, you can miss something you can still have.
I don't know.
All right. Good to talk to you, Mark. That's the end.
This is where we disagree.
I'll tell you what I do miss, though. This is a real odd one, and then I want to hear what yours is. Like, it's, this is like a real specific thing that you don't think about until you almost have it in a situation that you don't usually recognize it as to be the time that you want to have it. Had a strange piece of exchanged eye contact in the car with somebody across from me, to where it was just like I looked over and they were just staring across. And as a joke, I went like that, like, just to kind of, you know, give him a little more. And the guy didn't even flinch and just went back to the road. And I was like, whoa, that was super weird. And it made me miss that. Maybe miss like that happening in like a Barnes & Noble or a coffee shop, to where you're like.
Or yeah, when you pull up at a stoplight, you know, and you see people doing whatever they're doing, popping a pimple or like fixing their nails or picking their nails.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. If I ever see people picking their nose, I always lay on the horn. Just look right at him.
I have a video of my buddy that somebody you got it, dude. Just kind of do this back and I'm going.
Yeah. Oh, did it go in the mirror? Yeah.
Shoot me a text. Tell me a picture. I have a video somebody sent me of a comedian friend of mine picking his nose like he was in the fourth grade and he was going to bring it to show and tell the next day. And it's so embarrassing and I want to post it. And I don't know if I have the heart to do it because he'd probably ask me to take it down.
Somebody picked their nose and ate it. A football player, I thought.
Ditka?
No.
Sounds like a Mike Ditka move. A current player?
Yeah, I thought it was. Why can't I remember? I don't remember. I did a fake booger wipe on Mark Brunell one time.
Nice.
But it was on. It was on CBS on TV in the AFC Championship game. At the Steelers. So we're standing there. It's freezing cold, and my nose is running, and we're waiting for the defense. They had just got a stop, or we're waiting for a punt team or something. And I didn't even think about the cameras being on me. And I was, like, messing with my nose. And Brunell even said, like, stop picking your nose. It's going to be on camera that you're picking your nose. And I was like, okay. And did like a fake wipe on him, and the whole thing's on camera. Him talking to me before, da, da, da. And it's just like, oh, it's using Mark Brunell as a snot bag. I was like, oh,
that's amazing.
Of course.
Yeah, but those are the things you want caught on camera. That adds character to the,
so bad.
You know, and this is, you know, what comes with the territory of, wait, did that get blown up on social media? Where people like,
yeah, a little bit. I mean, people, it was 2010, so I don't know if Instagram was quite there yet, but
Sanchez uses his buddies as booger rags,
yeah, like as a snot rag. Like that was the crappy like headline that was like, well, that's a little much. But
I was gonna say, like, even for New York, like, there had to have been a moment where they're like, dude, we're the biggest media, like we're covering stuff top to bottom, like, are we really gonna put this story out? But then they're like, hey man, he's our cutie.
Yep.
Yeah, we are.
Oh my gosh, have you ever taking over somebody's story?
Yeah, it's
a lot of work.
It's a lot of pressure.
You're a lot, like, of pressure.
Yeah, you did it for USC football today.
I'm currently doing it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
I'd say it's going well. I got an SC shirt on.
Yeah, you're killing it, dude.
Nailed it.
You're like, and I'm pretty much done. I just take a picture of me in the tub wearing this and bye. Does it feel what I know your connection to SC is strong. Did they like for me, the first time I went back to campus, like after graduating, was kind of surreal. And now it's because it happens so infrequently. I know it happens more often for you. But do you, how much is the SC just connection in your life on the reg? You know what I'm saying? Because obviously,
I'm still in contact with a lot of the players, current and former.
Oh, cool.
But with the athletic department and Coach Helton, people like that in the building and in athletics, I think, you know, I try and keep a close connection. I like going to some of the practices in the spring, which we're missing right now. But I always thought it was important to keep a good relationship with them. They were so good to me. And, you know, those are some of your fondest memories. So it's fun, man. I like it.
Nice. But now give me the real answer.
Like,
speaking of SC, they snapped up some players in the draft. Did you watch the draft?
Yeah. Austin Jackson and Michael Pittman went pretty early, which is awesome.
Yeah.
For the program, for recruiting and all that. But I think Pittman could be a good player. And for him, you know, his dad, Michael Pittman, obviously played for a while, played in Arizona, great football player. And so he's kind of grown up with that and knows what the league's like. And I think he was a little upset he wasn't a first rounder, but it was just such a deep wide receiver draft.
Oh, yeah.
So I get it. But he's going to a place where they're going to throw the heck out of the ball in Indianapolis with Phillip Rivers. I mean, that's a pretty good landing spot, especially for a rookie learning from a great quarterback and all that. And then he's going to get plenty of targets. Plus, he didn't sign in the first round, so he's not going to have that fifth-year option. So he could – hopefully in 4 years, he plays well, sign a real big deal and, you know, go play his way into a really big second contract.
Did you give any pre-draft advice to anybody or did you have anyone reaching out to you? Like, yo, Sanchez, man, what should I wear, dog? Should I wear shoes or go just feet out, breathing into the world?
Yeah, I would have just said.
I was a white guy, by the way. That was the worst.
I don't see color, Adam. You know that. sitting down with the quarterbacks was fun because, you know, I've lived through that situation. I've, you know, gone through the draft prep and all that. And so when you sit down with somebody for the first time to watch film, you don't know like where they're coming from, what they want. And at that point in their career right now, everybody is pulling at them, whether it's endorsements or, you know, family or whatever. They have, you know, 10 Zoom calls a day with 10 different teams. They're learning playbooks. So their world is just crazy. And for one more person like me to ask, I feel bad even asking for the interview. But at the same time, I'm like, right away, just to break the ice, like, dude, I don't want anything from you. Like, let's just have fun. Let's watch some tape. I might have some pointers for you. I lived through this. I'm a resource for you whenever you need it. And if you don't need it, you're not going to offend me. And so as soon as I kind of came on with that vibe and from that angle, they were awesome. And they just were totally themselves and had fun and started laughing and having a good time. So that was it's fun to do interviews like that. And then you're just immediately you start pulling for those guys, you know, like you develop this bond with them and you're just like, as soon as they got drafted, I was like, I was related to them or something, you know, yeah. I'm so stoked. So it was really cool.
Yeah. You crushed those interviews. Those were QB one-on-ones that you did for our podcast Fourth and Forever, which I got to be honest, the comments were so strong in favor of you being a great interviewer. See me? I'm already getting choked up. I was like, okay, message received. Wow. Everyone's like, dude, Mark is so great. You don't even need Adam. Like, this guy's
nobody
carry the weight.
Nobody
go on YouTube,
that.
Dude. I put down at least three of those comments. No, you
where's that sexy, what did they call him? Quick fat? Yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah, I love that guy. Yeah. By the way, he's in great shape right now. What was your favorite part about getting to travel? Obviously that was like right up before, well, some of those you did right before we went into this quarantine, right?
Yeah. So
in the fall.
Let's see, the Justin Herbert one we did at his pro day. So whatever day the NBA shut down, It was that day was his pro day.
Wow.
They almost canceled the pro day. And then we flew home, and that was like it. Everything just shut down.
Do you think the government was waiting for you to land? They were like, Sanchez is touching in 3, 2, 1,
like,
pandemic.
I called up the big guy and said, hey.
Good for you, dude.
DC.
Yo.
You're big done.
What can you tell how prepared or well quarterback's going to do? Like when we did that workout that you set up for us with Jordan Palmer and his camp with Burrow and Josh Allen and Kyle Allen and I'm still bleeding abdominally from that day. But did you – those guys all seemed like locked in, focused, like in good shape, whatever. But on the pro day, that's steps closer to, you know, draft day and then just starting the whole camp process and being in the league. Can you tell, like even with Herbert that day, just from his overall demeanor and disposition, how well he's going to do in his first year just based on, you know, his – vibe and energy and attitude, or is it just really
there's so many variables that go into this thing? And for a pro day though, he was locked in, you could tell. And you're so like scripted that pro day, I threw it through like 70 something passes, maybe 80 or something, which for a lot you want to, you know, be right around 50 plus or minus, you know, 5 or 10, and you're good. But he threw like 70 or 80, which is a ton. And you do that exact workout for 6-7 times, you know, like, okay, I'm going to throw a speed out to the right. I'm going to throw a to the left. I'm going to throw a go ball to the right. Here comes the scramble drill we want, whatever. And it's scripted. So you're, I mean, I guess you're a little nervous going out there. As soon as you like throw a ball, you're just, all right, here we go. Let's roll. But for these guys projecting their future, I think a lot's going to depend how long they get a chance to learn. And I think all of those guys that I got to interview will benefit, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally, from having, but it's to heal and make sure he's 100% good before he takes any unnecessary hits and has to play. And then for somebody like Herbert Love, for Love to go into that situation in Green, I think for him is just perfect.
Yeah.
Because learn from one of the best guys, that, you know, great fundamental, great footwork, great study habit, and one of the best guys at making up stuff on the fly, which Jordan Love does well himself. Now he's got one of the most amazing quarterbacks, you know, post-snap when plays break down ever to watch every single day. So, I mean, for him, he's just got to be a sponge and learn. The tough thing for Herbert, when you go to a big market like that in Los Angeles or New York, if you get drafted in the first round, they're expecting you to play. They're selling your jerseys. They got a new stadium coming in LA.
Oh, yeah.
So there's like this external PR pressure to play, you know? So sometimes that can interfere with the football side of things. So you just, I hope for him, as much as I know he wants to get on the field, that he gets a chance to watch for the majority of that first year, all of that first year before he has to go in and do it.
Did you like that part of getting drafted fifth overall and just jumping right into the league and playing? Or was there a part of you that was like, oh, I wish I could like, kind of like chill for a minute and kind of learn the ropes?
You can't – when it happens, when you're in it, you want to play. All these guys want to play right now.
Yeah.
And so you don't think about, yeah, maybe if I sat for a year, I could learn a whole lot. You're just, I want to play.
Yeah.
Looking back now, would it have benefited me? Yes. But that team was built to win, and they drafted me to play.
Yeah.
You know, that was the team's plan, was to draft somebody that they thought was ready to play right away. And, you know, for the first couple of years, it worked out great. And then things, there's a lot of turnover, a lot of other variables that come into play, and it doesn't work out. But
oh, I'd say it worked out pretty good. You not only were the first rookie quarterback to win his first three starts, you were the third most postseason. You hold the record for the third most postseason road victories by an NFL quarterback with Jake Delhomme, Len Dawson, and Roger Staubach. You have the most playoff victories by a rookie quarterback tied with Joe Flacco, and the most consecutive conference championship games to begin his career. And you got a sweet stash and a dope kid and a big ass house with a nice fucking swimming pool bed that I crashed in and drooled on and spilled cashews on.
So yeah, I'd say it worked out, but I just mean like the longevity of their career.
yeah.
and building something around them. For somebody like Tua, they're in that team. They had all those draft picks that they're stockpiled this last year with all the trades and everything. And now all these young guys coming together can keep these guys for 4 to 5 years all together, and your team grows together. So that's, you know, we were a very veteran team, and I was very young, so there was going to be turnover inevitably after a couple years, maybe three tops. And then, you know, deals come up, guys get old, guys retire, you know, that's the way it goes. So you hope that you can kind of keep a tight-knit group, a nucleus of a team together for as long as possible. And just, that's what you want, is you want opportunities at the playoffs, and then you go make your run. That's all you can do. It's just like that ability to get into the postseason, get into the postseason and take your shot at the Super Bowl. And the more opportunities you have, the more chances you have to win a Super Bowl. So that's kind of their motto, is just give us an opportunity, we'll roll the dice.
Did Peyton Manning say anything to you after that AFC Championship game? Like, I'm always curious the exchanges with QBs at the center of the field. Did he just say like, hey, Papa John's pizza's on me? Or did he just say like, good luck next year? Or no. Hey, Eli's got a weird face. Like, good thing I got the fucking big straw on that one.
He was great. Just, I think we beat him my rookie year to get into the playoffs. Like the second to last game, we had to win like 3 in a row to get in. And then when we went on the road there in the championship game, he was excited to get back to another Super Bowl. And you could feel his excitement. It's like Matt by year, just like, just dying inside. But you got to go be a pro and shake his hand and, hey, man, good luck. Go win a Super Bowl, bud. Congratulations. And you just said, great season. Stay healthy. You know, good luck.
Do you think anybody's ever just walked up to midfield and just been like, I hope you fucking lose.
And hope you lose in 2 weeks.
Yeah, or upset it with a smile so that the cameras can't really pick up
on it. Yeah, I don't know. Like, if you were just like,
Eat your motherfucker.
Good game, congrats and everything, but I hope the Saints win the Super Bowl. Like, what? You're like a total asshole.
Have you been doing what most people have been doing in the quarantine without sports? You know how like NFL Network's playing old games. I even saw you were gramming along with one. What game was
it? Our old game.
Yeah,
on Sunday night. It was a old. I think my third year. We opened up with the Cowboys on the 9 Memorial 10-year anniversary. I want to say.
Yeah.
And so somebody sent me the clip, and so I started sending out messages to all the old players. By the time the game was over, it was so funny. There were probably 7 or 8 guys from that team, from the Jets team, texting back and forth, sending messages on Instagram. I talked to Dustin Keller, Kevin O'Connell, Mark Brunell, excuse me, and Mike Tannenbaum, our GM, talked to Rex Ryan, talked to all these guys. We just started, hey, the game's on, this game's on, blah, blah, blah. And I was texting with Shoddy, and I was like, hey, man, why did I pump fake that thing? He goes, I don't know, but that week of practice, I told you to stop doing that. It was so funny. I was like, I think you're right. He goes, no, I remember. I told you stop doing that.
Dude, that's amazing. Yeah. Do you think that is like, and I'm curious, that's so cool that you guys get to do that, and definitely loop me in next time. But when, do you think that more so now you're getting flooded with like memories of playing because it's not happening? Or do you feel like when the season's going, are you just so like dialed into other aspects of the season that you don't really have a chance to like step back and reminisce? Do you feel like you're doing it more so now?
And sorry, my brother keeps trying to call me.
Oh, that's all right. And what memories, I guess I would ask, what with all this downtime, what memories are, because football's starting to ramp up and we're obviously being active and talking about it, what memories are really flooding back, you know, game-wise, or are you, you know, hitting up old guys just to hash out like old details of games, or?
I don't know about, I mean, there's a certain, I guess, a fine line of like having fun with those memories and then like, you know, turn the page kind of thing. Like, all right, man, we get
Well, let's turn that page back for a minute and give me a couple fond Mark memories.
Well, I just, from doing this USC Instagram thing, that was, they put up some old highlights and they sent over a bunch of pictures that they're like, hey, you know, you can post all these or whatever. And there are a bunch of old pictures of me hugging Damian Williams, getting the trophy for the role. And it snaps you right back into that moment of like, oh, I remember the smell of the grass, or how the crowd sounded. I remember talking, you know, to I think it was John Saunders after the game, and you know, that kind of stuff. You just, all of it comes back so quickly.
This was the Rose Bowl.
I remember, yeah, from the Rose Bowl in 2009. I remember walking out on the field with the B-2 bomber flying over and standing next to Coach Sarkisian, and the Bob O'Reilly song came on. Out here in the field, we fight for our meal. Dude, Teenage Wasteland, it was awesome. It was so awesome.
Wow, dude.
Just like, so whenever I hear that song, that is what I remember from, like, literally being on the edge of the field, the B-2 bomber, and then we're about to start this game. Like, it was really cool. Run out of the tunnel. That was cool.
I would venture to assume nothing pumps you up for a game like having a fucking
Dude, the flyovers are really cool. Really cool.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Man, it's good to be back. And you know what? The best part about being back is sharing the goodies with you, the fans. I love candles, okay? You know from listening to this podcast, we've always had candles living around the apartment and now my new place. And I'm tired of buying the bullshit candles from the store. I want some personal touch. I want something handmade. So that's why I found Hangover Candle Company. That's right. Homemade by a bartender in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's a big comedy fan, podcast fan, reached out, said, I love the pod, would love to send you some candles. I'm like, I'm not comfy giving you my address. He's like, come on, trust me. I was like, all right, let's roll the dice. Boom. Now I've got fucking 40 different flavors of Hangover Candle Company candles in my place. They're cut, sanded, poured, packed, and shipped all by him. And you can choose from over 200 different containers, okay, to build your candle in, and over 40 different scents to create your own smell. You can customize your own scent. Shit, man, they've got flavors like fucking root beer, apple pie, cinnamon stick, coffee, fresh cut grass, hazelnut, lavender, leather, maple syrup, peach, pine, sandalwood, spearmint, sea breeze, vanilla bean, watermelon. Go to Hangover Candle Co. On Etsy, okay? Go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co. It'll pop up the shop, and then pick your candles, and then use the promo code ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. 25%! Hangover Candle Co. is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But again, go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co., find the candles and the smells you want, create your own, and then use ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. I love candles. They're great for any occasions, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, fucking weddings, funerals, gender reveal parties, divorce parties, coming out parties, coming in parties, coming parties. These candles are the shit, and they're my fave, and I want you guys to have them. So type in Etsy.com and then type in Hangover Candle Co. And pick your candles and use ALN25 at checkout for 25% off. All right? Start smelling better. Start looking better. Start feeling better. Okay? Because everybody farts, and candles are a great way to get rid of that. And now back to the episode.
The way they're doing stuff like that in Louisiana and New York and stuff for the healthcare workers, people dig that. It's really cool.
SC, you didn't – I remember you telling me this before we did an episode of Fourth and Forever that SC wasn't the first choice, and your dad really helped you, you know, consult on making your college football, you know, helping decide what your future was going to look like.
Yeah.
I didn't even know, first of all, that you weren't even playing quarterback until your dad, who was very much involved in your athletic, you know, pursuits, that he consulted, was it Bill Cunterly and Bob Johnson, right?
Bill Cunity and Bob Johnson, yeah, dude.
And Bob Johnson was the coach of Mission Viejo High School, and you were not there, but they all kind of got together and just decided, which I guess to me, I never knew. Like, I knew in seventh grade I was only going to be offensive line or maybe a tight end if I grew more and my calves got to be where they are now, which, you know, too little too late. But you did. I just feel like kids know at a certain age that they're going to be QB, but you didn't know until high school, which –
Right.
Is that pretty standard?
Well, I think some kids are like, you know, it's pumped into them from their parents. You learn everything from your parents, right? And your peers, and when you're that young. So, you know, some kids are just like, you know, their dad tells them you're going to be a point guard in the NBA, or you're going to be a pitcher, or you're going to be a quarterback. Well, my dad was never like that. I played baseball, basketball, football. I pitched. I played a little quarterback. I played receiver. I played running back. I played linebacker. I played safety. all over the map. And it didn't really matter until, like, you know, before practice, after practice, throw the ball around a lot. And then it got to a point where, you know, my dad thought, he can throw the ball pretty well. He's pretty decent when I've taught him, you know, a couple three-step drops or easy stuff. And he seems to pick it up pretty naturally, but I don't know. I don't see kids. I don't have any experience with this kind of stuff. I think he's good, but he's my kid. I'm biased. So he went to those people who see 1,000 kids at that age and here, work him out. Tell me what you think. Should we pursue this or should he just, you know, practice piano or do something else? I don't know. But once they saw practice, they were like, he's got to keep doing this. He's pretty good.
Was it like, so, were you just fucking, were you just slinging it or was it like your footwork or?
I didn't know. Just doing what we did in a workout. You know, he told me to do certain drills or throw the ball in the trash can, go through this hoop or do this drill with your feet over. And I picked it up and it was it. And not thinking like, hey, one day I'm going to lead the Jets to an AFC title game. You know, like no chance. I didn't really
Dude,
go
that's
there.
So crazy. And so, and so on, once, the,
once
on
they the, give you that feedback, it's like, all right, let's pursue this. Let's work at it. You're good at it. And then you start to firm what you've worked on and firm what my dad thought when you start getting scholarship offers, you start playing in high school. And it was like, oh, okay. So this is going to be a like, and I really love it. I want to do this.
And you apparently sophomore year was when you transferred over to Mission Viejo.
Yeah. And so I thought like things were going well. My freshman year at Santa Margarita played pretty well, played a little bit on the, and then my sophomore year, I decided to transfer schools to play for Bob Johnson, who was the quarterback and head coach. And I remember making a huge deal about in the paper. It was like a newspaper thing in the Orange County Register. And I remember that was like the first article I've ever read about myself. Man, there's a lot of people really upset that I left Santa Margarita and now I'm turning to Mission. I better play well. I better play well. Dude. If I'm supposed to be this good, there's a whole lot of fuss for somebody who's, you know, if I wasn't any good. Yeah, but I guess it gave me a little calm, but it also like pushed me to kind of, I don't know, affirm what was being said.
Yeah. Do you even have haters at that stage too? Was there people I'm sure that were like when you left were like, oh really? Leave. Yeah.
People were pissed because they thought I was good. They thought I was going to be the next, you know, Carl Palmer went to that high school. There were some other good quarterbacks that went D1 in that high school. So they thought I was just the guy.
Who went to that high school? You said Palmer?
Carson Palmer went to Santa Margarita. So they're like, how did we let that kid leave? How do we let this talent leave our campus?
Oh yeah.
And so that kind of up like, whoa, okay, this is going all right. I got to go kick ass and see what happens because I want to play in college. I want to play after that.
You know, did you always have QB swagger, or do you think hearing those sentiments from people that were bummed, and then you go and your first pass, you threw a 55-yard touchdown?
I was at Santa Margarita. That was my first play on varsity in Santa Margarita. I get thrown in the fourth quarter, 3rd and 13, double special, throw it down the middle to Bobby Warren. He goes 5 yards for a touchdown. I mean, he stunned the DB like up. He freaking blew right by him, and I nailed him with this pass. Oh, my God. This is awesome. I got to do – this is so cool. So we win the game, and then the very next week, I'm not in. I don't play anymore. I don't play for the rest of the season. So my dad was like, what the hell's going on? And, you know, we talked to the coach and everything, and he's like, well, there was a scare, da-da-da. And so that was it. That was kind of when I decided to transfer that because I played that last year, and there was a better opportunity somewhere else to go play.
Damn.
So that's when people were kind of pissed because they saw me play a little bit, thought I was coming back, and I took off.
What was it about SC that finally, like, grabbed that stash and just reeled you in, just fucking?
No, this wasn't even a thought back then. I remember going up to spring practices in high school after I had already committed during spring break. And Brian Cushing was out here staying with my family. And so we'd go up to their practices on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday of spring break week when we were seniors in high school. And I remember we were driving up and we're probably at like the 405 where right by South Coast, right next to like Santa Ana and all that. and we pulled over into a 99-cent store so my dad could go get a razor and shave this little Flavor Saver that I was trying to grow out in high school. He literally pulled over the car, parked, walked in, grabbed the razor, came back in the car, and went like this, look up. And I looked up, and he goes.
Oh, one man.
Swipe, just one swipe, gone.
He's like, you're not going in.
I was like, what was that for? He's like, you're not. What are you doing with that? That looks stupid.
What are you, AJ from the Backstreet Boys? Take that shit off.
It was so funny, dude. It was so funny.
Dude, but that's
the same
like
thing
that.
With this stupid quarantine stash, bro. If my dad could leave his house right now, he'd come over and try and shave it off. Nothing changed. Get another
dollar store razor.
It's so funny.
Welcome to King's Guado Hotel. May I have your last name, please?
Good morning, ma'am. Can I help you?
Oh, my, what happened?
Bellmen are clumsy and stupid.
It's not a bellman. You've had this job since high school, right?
Well, actually, now I am the bell captain.
Oh.
All right, kid. You ready for check-ins?
I was born.
I think he was going to say I was born ready.
Steve's the captain. Captain Steve.
The closest thing we have to a god on Earth, Gunther Gashamone!
It's worse than I thought.
He's a complete slimeball, right?
Oh, yeah. No question.
Do you feel my foot on your foot?
That's not me.
There's something under the table that feels like a foot.
What are you doing right now?
I'm working.
I got a promotion.
I just lied to Kelly.
Why would you do that?
I don't know, man. I just want another shot.
Sid Whitman worked his way up the ladder and bought the hotel.
He's the boss.
Do me a favor. Take it easy on the bellman, would you?
I'd rather have Crackguard melt my balls.
Take care, boys.
I mean, it's a huge scam. And those girls were in on it, too.
Don't you want to know what our bodies are capable of?
Girl, yes.
Definitely. I just work here during the day, but my nights is off.
Let's do this!
Gunther is conning everyone with Spirit Fresh.
You broke into a guest room.
This is unacceptable.
He has been impersonating a manager, and that is a felony.
I don't think that's a felony.
He should be fired.
Get set.
Go. Bunch of really real G's burning trees to be low, sitting by 45 like I'm Jordan on the floor. Here we go. Guess the brain is what they say my name for.
I mean, I'm not sure he's ready for.
Shut up, bitch.
With our minds, we begin to urinate, and then, for real, into our pants.
I'm unforgettable.
What SC obviously like had gotten back into the spotlight when you got there and was like, I mean, you know, when obviously you were there, I think a couple of years after I graduated. And so being there, I can only speak from a fan perspective, how fucking bonkers it was with the Coliseum and the school and how it like, you know, they were, you know, as big as any, as the Lakers, as any pro team in LA and maybe even around the country. And so I can only imagine what it's like to get there. And not only be a player, but to be a quarterback and then become the quarterback.
Yeah.
You just need to, like, just getting there and how the pressures and excitement. Because as a fan, all we get to do is sit back and watch and enjoy. But, man, the pressures that probably come with being a student athlete, especially for the program that is now dominating all the programs. Like, are you just, like, coming in with a cool, calm, collective attitude? Or are you like, fuck, dude, this is getting serious now. And now I have a real opportunity to build my life here.
Well, you kind of you adapt to that environment a little bit. You kind of adapt to the way your peers act and all that. And it really is a credit and a testament to Coach Carroll, the way he set up the program. And we were, I mean, our facilities were not nearly as nice as other places, but Coach made it feel like it was the best. He had this way of he's a psych major, so he had this way of talking to these young kids and molding your mind just to get you ready to play, to get you excited every day. I never remember him being like sad. Like I can't ever remember like a bad day. He just doesn't have bad days because he won't let himself. And he's so mentally tough and so good at communicating a positive message to people and keeping it simple, keeping it fun, keeping it light. And when it's time to play, it's time to play. And it was one of the things I've ever seen. And then I end up wearing number 6, Rich is 5. So my locker is right next to him. And I see a dude that just works his ass off every day. We run sprints. We run 110s. He's got a 25-pound weight. Just
who is this?
Reggie Bush.
Oh, shit.
So, like, when you see somebody working like that, I see Liner, John David Booty, these guys watching a ton of tape after hours, studying with Sark, all that kind of stuff. So it just becomes who you are. You see that. It's the same thing for these guys going to the next level. If you get a chance to learn from people like that for a year or two, which I had at USC, I didn't play till my third year, right? When John David went down, I played three games my third year, played a whole season my fourth year and left. So those first 2 years, all you do is get practice reps and watch and learn and watch and learn and watch and learn. And it was so cool to learn from, because when you get your chance to do it, it's like you've already done it. You've already seen everybody do it. You know what the blueprint is. Now you just add your own personal flavor to it. But that was one of my favorite things. I remember when it was about my turn to play, and I would go in and watch old Carson Palmer tape when Coach Carroll and Coach Chow had first gotten there. I would go watch his clips all the time. Carson, to me, was, you know, my favorite player growing up. I was his ball boy when he was in high school. Like, I love the guy. We'd go watch him. They used to have training camp at UCI here in Irvine. And so we drive up and watch him during training camp just because I love Carson.
Did you go as him for Halloween?
No, I should have. Coach Carroll, this clip, right, I was going to play, and he spliced there, Carson rolling to the left, throwing the ball deep. Carson doing a play action and then throwing a deep post. Carson throwing a quick slant, throwing slug O seam, like all these different plays. And so it was one Carson play, one of my plays from the three games I played my redshirt sophomore year. And he just spliced all these plays together with the film guy, and it was like Carson play, Sanchez play. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. And he goes, what are we watching here? I was like, we're watching me and Carson. He's like, but what? And I said, well, it's a lot of the same plays because it's the same offense. And he goes, yeah, you're making the throws. He said, I did it like this on purpose. This is your turn now. Like, you need to take him off the pedestal, and you need to go be the USC Trojans quarterback for the team. That's it.
Whoa.
And I was just like, whoa, okay. You know, so it was that gave me so much confidence, because you feel the coach believing in you, and that gives you like some motivation. It gives you, yeah, like I said, it just gives you confidence. And that was, for him to be able to do that, those are the kind of things he did with different players at different times. He just knew what to say, when to say it, and got us ready to play.
What do you think Pete's better at, pregame pump-up speeches or talking to you after a loss and curbing your mindset?
He wasn't like a rah-rah. Like, he kind of delegated some of those responsibilities to different coaches, and they would be like the rah-rah, like pump it up guys. And then there were naturally guys that were like that on the team, so he kind of let them do the talking. But he wasn't like a, you know, motivational, like, you know, this is how we're gonna win. And he's just like, hey boys, you're ready to play, we know what to do, cut it loose. You know, T-Will, take it. Or so-and-so, take it. T-Mac, take it. Whoever. Just, Cushy, get these boys fired up. Let's go. You know, and everybody's already jumping around ready to go. He didn't have to do that. But it was more of like the week-long build-up. Dude, that's where he was the best. We would be going up to Washington State, and we end up beating them, you know, by 50 points. And that entire week, as an offense, we thought we were going to play the 85 Bears. Like, he had us so dialed in for this game. Like, it's one thing he would remind us: when a team's losing, the best thing you can do, keep their ass losing. Go beat their ass. If you're supposed to beat their ass, beat their ass. Because it's embarrassing if somebody like that comes and beats your ass because you just rolled your helmet out there thinking, oh yeah, we're going to roll over these guys. Better prepare, because you don't want to get embarrassed. And so you're like, oh shoot, like, am I doing everything I'm supposed to? He's like, you can't just pick and choose games. You can't just, he would say this in life, you can't pick and choose people to be respectful to. You got to do it to everyone, whether it's the lady path food or me as the head coach. You know, he would say that stuff to people. You don't can choose. Get your life in order. Get this stuff ready to roll. Go win games. Like, that's how he was. And so that week-long buildup was some of my favorite stuff. The pre-practice meetings, night before games, all that kind of stuff. And he would simplify it, make it fun, and then lose.
You talk about that pre-prep. How much is he doing, like, of – providing you with like game tape and things to look out for versus are you just doing on your own? You know, like, do they during the week on Monday, they go, hey, this is what to look out for. This, we're going to work on these plays and these drills because that's what they're going to be bringing to us. And then do they also go, and then also now, probably like any job, like even in acting, there's, you're always got to go do your own homework, right? And do your own work to prep. Right. So I'm sure there's a lot of that similarities with being a QB.
So they would do a good job of he would give like overall, here's how we're going to win the game early in the week. And then like big picture view, and then breaking it down, compartmentalizing. Okay, here's schedule for the week. We're going to chip away at this thing because we can't win the game today, but we can win Tuesday today. We can be better than them today, and that's going to help us Saturday. Wow. So that's how he would start. He's like, that's who we're playing this week, but now it's back to us. It's competition Tuesday, so every one-on-one drill, every team drill, there was a win-loss, and then the next day we would show highlights of that last practice. Dude, it would get heated. Guys, like, taking their shirts off, yelling at each other. Like, it was awesome. You have to figure out who wins. Competition Tuesday was the day. It was like one-on-one receiver and D drills. So the receiver would win or the DB would win. They would stand up and like, hey, give it up.
Oh, shit.
Patrick Turner, give it up for Damian Williams. Everybody's like, hey. Offense, then on the defense, everybody's like, boo. You know, people yelling at. But it was like, it was back and forth in a meeting before practice. And he's like, and? What was that? Was yesterday? Put it on the shelf. Today is turnover or no turnover Wednesday. Offense, you take care of the ball, you win the day. Defense, you go get the ball, win the day, kind of thing. And so it was. It would just have like a wow. different theme for every day, and it was so fun. It was
that,
so fun.
Just instilling that extra set of like winning attributes, right? Just to always be thinking about trying. Because he does that with the Seahawks now.
And they would with. It was so funny. We had a running backs coach, Todd McNair, he was like the sideline, like get back guy at times. And he's on Friday when we're doing our walkthrough, guys are goofing off or whatever. He called me Sun Chips. He never called me as he used to just call Sun Chips. I don't know why. But
Sun Chips.
He goes, hey, Sun Chips, I know you're just low on totem pole, young freshman, but people are looking up to you. We are practicing our sideline discipline. Please take those off the white line of the field. Thank you. And like walk by. And make sure we're all standing blocked up. So stuff like that, they just remind you early on, hey, man, got to fall in line. Everybody's got to do the right thing.
Does Pete, your dad being so involved with everything, did he, once you picked SC, which I know was a big deal because OC kid, having Palmer be like, you know, a god to you was when you signed, was it like this big like sigh of relief? And did your dad kind of take a step back at that point and go, all right, like now it's your turn to kind of take the torch more or less? Or did he stay involved and like have talks with Pete? Did he almost like a dad when he sends off his daughter getting married, like, hey, take care of my boy. Like, did he look at Pete and go, if my boy fucking doesn't have fun, I'm going to come back and fucking put your dick. I don't know. Did he, you know, some sort of.
No, he's not like that. He was still involved. Well, at that time, practice open. So open to the
public. Oh yeah.
So dude, it was like there was a line around Howard's Field every day. See Reggie to go see Liner. When we started playing, it was to see get all your autographs from Brian Cushing, Clay Matthews, Ray Maluka, like all these guys. And it was a big deal. Like every practice, they're cheering. It felt like a mini scrimmage. It was cool. It was a thing to do during the week in LA. And
celebs would come. He would bring celebs, right?
Celebs would come. They would come to the locker room after games and stuff. But it was because I could come to practice. My mom, my brothers, my dad. I don't know if he missed maybe one or two practices my entire year at SC, even when I was playing. Like when I was running scout team and all that kind of stuff, he was still – and he loved it. And my family was there, so I'd go give him a big hug before practice and then – run out and go play. You know, it was really cool. It's nice to your family like that 4 or 5 days a week in college, and that's not normal, you know? So that was fun.
Do you and Pete still, when you talk, how much time after you left SC to go into the draft, did you guys kind of like square things away? Because I know he was like,
it was
wanting you to stay.
Almost immediate.
Oh, yeah.
That day I talked to him. And there were no hard feelings because he's like, listen, I wasn't saying support you, saying I disagree with your decision. That's it. Like, I love you. You're going to do great. I just, one, I want you to stay. I think you could benefit from having another year here.
Fuck yeah.
But that's it. Like, this thing, and it took on a whole life of its own and got blown way out of proportion. But that was
Yeah, didn't you tell me that you guys talked like that before. Night before you were going to...
Yeah, the night before. The night before, we were eating In-N-Out cheeseburgers, talking until 2 in the morning before I did that press conference. So it wasn't like... It just looked so bad, the optics of it, when we're walking by each other after we had, like, shaken hands. And he's the picture in the LA Times is, like, him walking past me, me walking past him, like, super awkward.
Oh, God,
like,
we didn't
like each other or something, so... I mean, they're not going to pick a picture of us hugging because then it doesn't help the story. So
crazy. Well, you got used to that once you got to New York. Is there any story like or advice now, like, again, being almost like a, you know, brother and father to a lot of the players and just to the league now, which is so dope, by the way. People have got to know, not only are you crushing it on our podcast, Fourth and Forever, but, dude, get up inside the NFL, college football Saturday. I mean, dude. People tell me, I get so many messages, by the way, I should forward them to you just so you can get an even bigger head. But I think you're like, you're on your way, dude, to being just like a staple sports reporter, analyst, like godfather, like, you know, so much and having this like cool persona and being able to relate to everybody and still being like at a young age. I mean, you're like, what are you, 42? Like, you're still at a point to where people... But you know, like, you've got like,
no, I appreciate that.
And even, I and this is why, you know, I got so comfy with you right out of the gate is that, you know, I know sports, but obviously not to the level in football that you do X and O's, but you've never made me feel like less than or talk down to me. You always just like find a way to break it down so that I can be included in the conversation. And dude, I think that's like a trait that's going to continue to pay off.
I appreciate that. It makes it fun, like you said, when you develop the relationships with the players. And then if there's a fun way to give some insight, shed some light on a topic that I experienced or I know well, I think that's fun. So I try and relate that to the fans or convey that to the fans. And then the TV's been great. It gives me plenty of time to spend at home with my son. And then there's plenty of time to go on the road and work. It keeps you close to the game so I can watch a bunch of tape. And that's, you know, I if I can help any of these young guys with any, you know, things good or bad that I did, I'd love to let them avoid one of those, you know, pitfalls that are unnecessary for them if somebody could have just told them from their perspective. So that's kind of where I'm at with the young guys. But they make it fun, man, and they keep you young and they keep you into it. It's always good. But they're a world that you know, everything changes with that one day, right? As soon as the draft's over, it's like you're this 22-year-old kid with millions of dollars now in your bank account, and you're expected to act like a 65-year-old judge with the discernment of a 65-year-old judge. Like, that, it's
impossible.
In some ways, it's unfair and impossible, but that's just the way it is. That's what people expect. They want you, you know, to be this buttoned-up, you know, perfect thing, and it's not always like that. Like, you watch the Jordan documentaries and stuff, you saw how all that kind of stuff got to him. It's frustrating, and you can't go anywhere, you can't do anything, people have their phones out all the time, it's hard. And so these guys are just getting into that world. They thought college was crazy. I mean, it's not even close. It's a whole fucked, different animal, dude.
Oh man, and there's no real wild. There's no documentary they can watch, or I'm sure conversations with you, whoever can help to kind of like, you know, get them prepped.
Lived it, no, but dude, it's like, and I was nowhere even close to Jordan, not even in the same universe, but still, as the quarterback of the New York Jets, you're like, you know, you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. You can't like do the stuff you used to do, go back to your, you know, college bar or go whatever. You just, those things are gone. It's like, just not.
Like, do you think
you can't? I shouldn't say you can't. You can, but
you what?
Just get ready for the fallout and you know, all the stuff that comes with it. So especially nowadays with social media and everything. But the three guys I talked to, I think they got a good head on their shoulders. They understand that things are about to change. I don't think they know exactly how much, but they'll figure it out pretty quick. They're sure.
Do you think Joe Burrow is aware of the expectations that are you know, just not only being number one, but like taking over a franchise?
Sure. And his home franchise, you know, there's a lot of in-state pressure, and, you know, right now everybody's supportive, but you go out there and and lay an egg and only win three games, I mean, they're calling for his head just like anybody else, you know? So maybe it lasts a little longer there because he's a hometown kid, so they try and give him the benefit of the doubt. At the end of the day, it's a mercy, right?
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
You were telling me this funny story. I can't remember what it was exactly. Maybe this will like jar your memory. But when you got on Inside the NFL, you're just trying to talk about like finding your way on that show with like all these old vets. And like, you know, you're this fun, goofy guy, like trying to like, you know, plant your seed as being part of the show and not step on toes. But also like, you know, you're quick. So it's like when things would happen and you would want to jump in, but you're like, I don't want to right out of the gate kind of be shitting on people or whatnot. Could you remember what I'm talking about? There was one story that you... I mean, I'm sure it happened a lot, but there was something that happened with one of the guys and you started dogging on him for something.
I think we had to refilm something.
Was it with Boomer? I don't know.
Phil Sims is
Phil Sims.
Though.
Yeah.
He almost like lures you in to think like, oh, he's an older guy. Maybe he doesn't. You know, maybe he's not in the game as much. Hey, old timer, the game's changed since you've been playing. You know that. But he knows everything. He watches everything and is so smart. And so if, you know, Ray Lewis or Brandon Marshall or anybody say anything, he's like, whoa, hold that. Or like he'll correct them. He'll do a camera where I was like, oh, yeah, I can go there and totally agree. I can change. What they're saying, I'm just, you know,
yeah,
here to have a good time, here to help, you know, I'm not trying to be controversial.
yeah.
But Phil Simms just jump on him, man. Dude, it's so funny. He said something like, he's like, Brandon Marshall, you don't even know how many teams are in the league. Okay, don't start with me. That's for you. You know, like, that's how he'll address people. And I was just like, whoa. It's like a locker room again. It was really funny.
Did any of those guys kind of pull you to the side and give you like a media, you know, rundown of like, yo, man, just be you, do this?
JB's the best.
James Brown,
he's one of those guys that's always on, but it's so genuine. Not like a fake.
Oh, Marky Mark.
Certainly an awesome guy, and always he could be on TV at any moment. Like, it's really weird. But he was at the broadcasting boot camp I went to and just immediately like, hey man, if you need anything, here's my number. Let me know. I get to the airport after the thing's over and he's having this conversation, helping some old lady with her ticket or where the gate is. And he's saying a way that sounds like he's on TV and I don't even know I'm near him, but he's just narrating next adventure in this airport. Like, so you're going to go to gate B. Okay, you see that young gentleman over there with the blue shoes? You're going to walk right past him. You're going to hang a right. You know, like he just said it like so perfectly and so sweet and so nice. And he didn't even know I was listening. I was like, dude, that is his true colors. He's one of the people I've ever met and so good for television. So he was, he makes it fun, man. And he also teed up before the set, be like, okay, so the points you want to make are, and I'll, you know, whatever. You know, Matt Stafford, I love his ability to change up his arm angle, blah, blah, blah. You go, okay, so arm angle with Stafford. And what else do you want to say about the young rookie QBs? Oh, you know, Sam Darnold comes back from having mono and he had a great outing because of whatever. So he says, okay, got it. And he does that with everybody. He doesn't even have to write anything down. And he'll just like remember their topics and then just transitions. Like the perfect point guard pass, like right in the shooting pocket, boom, and you just nail it. And he tees you up for what you wanted to say because he knows, because he studies, because he researches, because he talks to you. And then it just flows so perfectly. So you really appreciate anchors that can do that.
Fuck.
He's awesome.
Well, you're awesome. And I love you for taking time to do this.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see your face. You look like you're, I mean, you know, I thought I was going to be the one out of this twosome to really be svelte and have the, what did Camille say when we were in Miami? The model body. She's like, your model face is already on point. She's like, but like, I didn't think an APAC was possible for a white Jew, but you're pulling it off. No, she didn't say that.
Yeah,
at all.
Where did you get the picture in the promotional thing? That's from the GQ photo.
yeah. Oh yeah.
How funny is that? No shirt, and a beanie and like that thin chain. Remember they gave me the chain at that photo shoot? I was like, what is that? It reminded me of the Lonely Island turtleneck and chain. It's so weak, dude.
Was that your call to go shirtless for the GQ cover?
No, they asked for that. They asked for that. I hit a couple push-ups right before and some sit-ups, so.
Come on.
But they were setting up the cameras. So I was like, oh, shoot. Some curls.
Couple of these real quick.
Exactly.
Nice and camera ready.
Exactly.
All right. A quick rapid fire, a fan question. Mark, I know you're a charitable guy. I know you always have been. So I'm going to do something special. I did this with Sue Bird, WNBA superstar, where we're going to do a 10 question game. And every question that you get right, I'm going to donate $100 to the charity of your choice.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, next time, don't sound so surprised that I like to donate.
No, that was just cool. I didn't know this was going to happen.
You're like, wow, I didn't know that you gave back anything other than subpar comedy.
You strike me as more of a taker, not a giver.
Hey, man, talk to my sixth grade girlfriend. No, actually, don't talk to her. I think she's got the virus.
God.
Too soon. Too soon. All right, here we go. Question number one. Which of these was said by someone close to you in quarantine? My friend knows someone in the Pentagon. We're going to be shut down till next September. I miss taking a shit in a restaurant. We should start a workout class on Zoom. A, B, C, or all of the above?
B, I think B. What was that one again?
I miss taking a shit in a restaurant.
No, the other one.
Should we start a workout class on Zoom?
No, we're going to be shut down in September.
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct. $100 to Mark Sanchez. That is correct. Question two, what is the best thing about quarantine? Getting close to loved ones, reading more books, getting thoughtful about how much perspective is actually needed to live a full life, or Instagram?
Instagram.
That is correct. $200 from Mark Sanchez in the bank.
You're an idiot. That's funny though.
Question number three. Are you woke?
True.
Yeah, that is correct. $300 from Mark Sanchez in the bank. Question number four. What was your first impression of comedian Adam Ray?
Oh, this is like an open-ended.
Yeah, there's still a right or wrong answer here. $100 is at stake. Choose your answer wisely.
Well, I just get the essay paragraph part.
Yeah.
Free response. Okay. You know, he was really. Yep.
How about what did you think of him before you saw him on stage?
No, I saw him on stage and he crushed it. I've told this story multiple times, but I will retell it, Adam. It was, you were sandwiched between Bill Burr and Joey Diaz.
Yeah.
Joey Diaz. That's right. And two comedians. And I don't know a ton of comedians. I know like the mega ones that are, you know, famous, but I was like, whoa, these guys are really funny. I've seen their stand-up stuff. I hope he's good, because that's a hell of a spot to be in. Dude, you nailed it. Nailed it. The crowd was rocking. Me and Scotty were dying laughing. I think you're strongest working the crowd, interacting with the crowd, because you're so quick that when people give BS answers and you call them out and you're just like, wait a second, how high are you right now? And the dude's just like, and you're like, don't worry, dude, I'm the police. It's okay. I'm pretty high too. Or you say something like that and they're just like, whoa. So yeah, that's my Adam Ray story.
That is correct. $100 in the bank. That's $400 for Mark Sanchez for his charity, the charity of his choice. Mark, question number five. Is P. Diddy the MJ of rap or the Tony Kukoc of pottery?
The Tony Kukoc of pottery?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Great. That's correct. $500 in the bank for Mark Sanchez. Mark, what is your favorite movie quote, and can you do it?
Oh, geez. Um, You know, one of my favorite ones is when Forrest Gump goes in and doesn't realize Jenny's kid is his kid. You know, and he's like,
But what's his name? And she's like, Forrest. And he's like, Forrest. That's my just name. Like
his, he says, she says, just like his daddy. He's like, he got a daddy named Forrest too.
He just doesn't pick up on it.
Then he goes in and watches TV with the I See Dead People kid from
Haley Joel Osment.
Yes. So he goes, what you watching? Bert and Ernie. Oh.
I'm more of a Grover guy. What if he just said that? Cookie Monster's my jam and just peaced out. Let me know when you're watching something better. Yeah, dude. That movie's unbelievable. That scene, I think, is where he solidified his Oscar nom. I think if they do a movie about Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks will play Meryl Streep. That's how good he is.
We're good.
All right, that's correct. $600 in the bank, Mark Sanchez, for the charity of your choice. Mark, if you got high on 420 and somebody came up to you with a chocolate chip burrito cheeseburger pizza, would you eat it?
I don't smoke weed. If I were to.
Well, the question wasn't do you smoke weed. The question was on 420, the holiday, would you eat a delicious treat?
Is it a government holiday now?
Well, I mean, look, it's naysayers like you that are keeping
Snoop
us down.
Said it is. Snoop said it is.
And let's be honest, what Snoop says goes.
Dude, I love in Snoop's comments. I don't know if you see this, but if like you can't go through a page on one of his pictures that he doesn't put, I'm high AF right now. I just think it's so funny.
Oh, yeah.
That somebody has to type that and put it on Snoop's page. I just think that's hilarious.
By the way, we got to get him on the show.
Nope, D-O-W.
For them forever. Have you ever kicked it with him? I'm sure he came down to SE, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's awesome. He's funny, dude.
He is funny.
He did it all smoke, too. That was cool.
Yeah, that was so
that
cool.
That was really cool.
All right, $700 in the bank. That is correct. You would you take a bite, I think is what you said, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
take a bite. I know you're a snack guy. Okay, Mark, if you had a chance to watch all of our boy Scotty McKnight's highlights from college, would you, and on a big screen, and you were playing wingman for him, and it was with Shakira or J-Lo, which highlight would you pull up first?
Probably his first touchdown he caught on like a corner route against Colorado State. And we were in the end zone or right by the goal line where he scored. We scored one of his first touchdowns. That was pretty sweet. It was a cool catch. Catching over the shoulder, almost Willie Mays-ish. It was pretty cool.
I've seen that highlight. That is correct. $800 in the bank for Mark Sanchez for the charity of his choice. Question number 9, Mark. What is the difference between Pete Carroll and Bill Parcells?
Whoa. I mean, different schools of thought with like a West Coast terminology mentality, different tree degree. Like Pete Carroll's the Bush disciple, where Parcells was kind of his own tree, like Belichick, very closed off, a little more authoritarian. You know, don't give out information. Media is not your friend. Coach Carroll kind of used the media to publicize what was great about the school and help with recruiting, get celebrities to games, all that kind of stuff. He maximized that aspect of it. They're just not that one's, you know, better or more successful. You can either way, obviously. But they're, I mean, they couldn't be more opposite.
Who would you not be surprised to get a late night DM from? Which one would you be less surprised, Pete or Bill Parcells?
Well, Pete, if Bill Parcells DM'd me, that'd be pretty weird. Stay up. Nothing.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I'm imagining it. It's very weird. That is correct. $900 in the bank for Mark Sanchez. Mark, question number 10, and I believe our final question. And what we all know that the deeds. Your son is probably the coolest kid that I've met. And I think that's only
your niece and nephew.
They're cool, but they're starting to slip a little bit. My nephew's he's getting a little aggressive, and so and my nieces are 10, and they're very cool. But they're starting to also, like, you know, it's been a little better in the last few weeks where they've wanted to teach me, like, cool dances or handshakes, or, you know,
yeah,
say no and not be like, Uncle Adam, like, are you serious right now? They don't have braces, but I like to do that for a know-it-all kid. Like, do you really think that shaving your chest and wearing a jean jacket is going to be cool for your stand-up show? Okay, do what you want and see what happens. They're starting to get that attitude a little bit, which is normal.
DJ's going to get there, though. Right now, he loves being with, you know, his dad and stuff, but he's going to get to that age where it's like, you know, go away, Dad.
Yeah. Leave me alone. Yeah. Dude, just buy the beer, put it downstairs, and leave. What is the, because I've been around DJ, and I know how sweet he is, and I want to know, what's the sweetest thing during this quarantine that he said to you that made you get misty-eyed?
We were playing either Hot Wheels or doing a puzzle or something, but he's just like, gives you the best friend comment. Like, you're my best friend, Dad. I was just like,
oh, dude. Oh, you're like, what you watch?
Thanks, Squirt.
What you watching?
Thanks, champ.
Bert, want to watch some Bert and Ernie?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, it was pretty good.
That's awesome, dude.
He's a good boy.
He is a good boy. Well, that's the correct answer. That is it. That's $1,000 in the bank for Mark Sanchez for the
DJ charity. For the win.
DJ for the win. Dude, I love you, man. I miss you.
Love you, bud. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks for chatting. And where can people find you on social media?
At @Mark_Sanchez.
Ooh, with the little underscore in there.
How about that?
You're the man, dude. Enjoy your weekend.
I love that meme, too.
Did you see
that meme with the girl catching outside?
No.
Where it says, like, government, stay inside.
The girl's
like, catch me outside. How about that?
Did you see the one of the nurse in Scrubs standing in front of the person, the woman that was leaning out the side of the best friend's ride?
No.
Oh, dude, it was
I don't want no Scrubs. So yeah. Good.
It goes, dude, it goes Scrubs in front of whatever the line is, best friend's ride. Yeah, all that TLC.
Your side of his best friend. Yeah, there learn the lyrics. All right.
You're the best. Enjoy the weekend.
Love you, dude. Bye.
Love you. Bye, Margie.